Here's a surprising stat for you, Unpacked listeners. Toronto is one of the most diverse cities in the world, so no matter what you travel for, you will find it here. You can browse vintage stores in Kensington Market, or eat dumplings in Little Tibet, or explore the fascinating history of footwear at Bata Shoe Museum. Even better, the city is an easy flight away from most American cities, so it's the perfect place for a long weekend. Find your Toronto at destinationtoronto.com. I'm Maislin Green, and this is Unpacked, the podcast that unpacks one tricky topic in travel each week. And today, we are merging the worlds of eclipse chasing and Airstream travel. Doesn't that sound like such a great combination? As you may know, on April 8th, 2024, the Sun, Earth, and Moon will come into complete alignment and a total solar eclipse will sweep over a section of the United States. This will plunge some cities around the U.S. into darkness for up to 4 minutes and 27 seconds. The cities include Austin, San Antonio, and Dallas in Texas, Little Rock, Arkansas, Indianapolis, Indiana, Cleveland, Ohio, and Buffalo and Rochester in New York. It will be one of the most accessible solar eclipses in years. So this week, we're going to hear from Scott Roberts, founder of Explore Scientific, a company that designs, builds, and sells telescopes, binoculars, microscopes, and more. He's also a passionate amateur astronomer who has seen 4 solar eclipses, and he travels around the United States for astronomy events in his vintage Airstream, a 1968 Overlander he named after his mother. This is the very Airstream he'll be taking to Texas in April to see the eclipse. So we talked about how and where to view the eclipse, and the ways that seeing an eclipse can change us. He's so passionate about the power that this can have on us as human beings, and why the Airstream is such an enduring symbol of adventure. Hey, Scott, welcome to Unpacked. It looks like a beautiful day where you are. Where are you?
I am in Springdale, Arkansas, and we're right in front of the Explore Scientific building.
That's so cool.
This is the Airstream, right? And it's called the Barber Jean. This thing has solar panels. It's got on-demand hot water heater, and it works really well.
You must have been pretty comfortable those couple of years you were on the road.
Yeah. When I first got it, somebody asked me, what does it feel like to you? And I go, well, I said, I'm going to sleep in the first night, you know? And at that time, it still had the original 1968 shag carpet. All of the attributes of the Airstream were original at that time. The only thing that's still original right now are these little lights.
I love it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I want to hear more of your Airstream stories for sure, but I was hoping we could just start with, what do you do?
I am founder and president of a company called Explore Scientific. We do telescopes, microscopes, binoculars, optics for outdoor exploration. I have a big interest in astronomy. I'm known for that field. And mostly what I do in astronomy for my own enjoyment is I like to do educational outreach in astronomy. So if things don't seem right in the world and I can't just go on a camping trip in my Airstream, I will go to a street corner with my telescope and let people look at it, maybe get their first glimpse of Saturn's rings or see the moon for the first time. I'm always blown away by how many people have never seen the rings of Saturn before for their own, you know, they've seen pictures of it and everything.
But with your own eyes.
They see it for the first time with your own eyes.
Yeah.
You know, and people are struck by a couple of things. One is that they initially don't think it's real.
Okay.
That they're really seeing the real live planet, you know, and so they'll look around the front of the telescope and they're looking for the slide or something I stuck in front of the telescope. And then I'll say, no. And I'll tap the telescope so it vibrates a little bit.
Yeah.
And they can see the planet jiggling. And they go, it's live. This is the real deal. And you're looking 900 million miles away. And I don't know why, but that number blows a lot of people away. They think, wow, I'm seeing something 900 million miles away. But, you know, seeing planets, I mean, we're looking at stuff literally in our own celestial backyard.
Have you always been like fascinated by celestial events and bodies and things like that?
I have a pretty young memory. My mother, Barbara Jean, this is the name of the Airstream. She was a Navy wife, you know, and so we lived on military bases and stuff. And we were living in, my mother tells me that it was a Quonset hut, you know, those kind of Airstream shaped buildings, you know. I remember I had my toys out on the kitchen floor and I was looking out the screen door and I saw a bright light, but because it was going through a screen door, it made a diffraction spike. So you got like this cross. Okay. And I just, I was fascinated by that. And I asked my mom what that was, you know, and she said, oh, that's a star. I now realize that that was probably Venus, you know?
Yeah.
But I was, to be that bright. I was three years old at that time. So I had some interest in that. And I was born in 1959. So I am, you know, space race baby, you know, and an Apollo era kid, you know, and all of that. And so always interested in the idea of exploring space. By 10 years old, I want a telescope so bad. I mean, I'm pleading with my parents to get me one. And yeah, I got a little tiny telescope for Christmas. I was thrilled over it. And I thought that I wanted to become a photographer. So I built my own darkroom and I started producing images best I could. And then this got me really fascinated with optics and what they can do. So I start working in a camera store and I'm starting to teach photography. This is in California. I'm then reintroduced to astronomy, but now on a higher level, you know? So we start selling telescopes for serious amateur astronomers. This is just before Halley's Comet came around.
Yeah.
And so there was that comet fever that was going on. And it was amazing. And I get to meet, during this time, I get to meet JPL scientists and professional astronomers and stuff. I was very glad I made that turn to go and do something I love to do.
You mentioned the kind of fever around the comet, and I feel like we have a similar fever going on right now around this coming solar eclipse.
That you
and
do.
So I was curious to know why you personally think eclipses are so fascinating.
Well, no one can tell you how amazing a total eclipse is, okay?
Yeah.
You can see videos, you can see pictures. And the pictures are beautiful and the videos are amazing by themselves, but it is not as amazing as actually witnessing one, because it's something that really strikes at your core, you know?
Yeah.
So the first total eclipse I saw, I'm now at this time working at, I go beyond the camera store and I'm working for a telescope company,
okay
manufacturer. And WGBH Boston, the guys that do the NOVA presentation, contact me and they say, hey, we need equipment. They don't tell me who they are at first. They just say they need equipment because of the eclipse. And I go, okay, well, this is the kind of equipment that you need and all the rest of it. And they said, well, we don't have anybody that can operate that. Can you do it? And I was like, well, I don't know. You know, and they said something like, would you do it for a documentary? And I said, yeah, I said, that sounds interesting. And I said, who is this? And he goes, oh, well, this is Nova from WGBH Boston. And I go, I'm in.
I'm sold.
I'm sold. Yeah, we go to Hawaii and we start getting set up and we go to Mauna Kea. Now, Mauna Kea is at 14,000 feet. Okay. They gave us special privilege. You know, we're from Nova. The National Geographic guys are there. And basically a who's who of documentary filmmakers are on the mountain.
Wow.
So I'm getting everything set up and I stay up. I stay awake nonstop for 4 days.
Okay.
Doing this eclipse. Yeah. Yeah, one of the things that you find out at 14,000 feet, because of lack of oxygen, it's very difficult to sleep, okay?
Oh,
this is probably what kills people, okay?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
you're staying awake
because
you can't get rested enough, all right, because there's not enough oxygen in your blood to actually go to sleep. But when the eclipse finally arrives, I have everything all set up. I have trouble getting things set up. Maybe part of an exhaustion problem and there was some equipment issues that I had to overcome, which I did. And so as the eclipse is starting to happen, the clouds had come up to the level where the clouds were actually covering up our lenses on our cameras.
Oh my
gosh. We have 35 millimeter motion picture cameras and they they cover it. Okay. And I'm going, no, like that. I actually stick my head up. I stand up and my head's above the cloud level. Okay. And I can see the sun is coming. All right. And so they have an open PA system and they are counting down the minutes until what they call first contact. And they're doing it in multiple languages because it was French teams and people from Spain. And, you know, so there it's simultaneously all these languages and they're playing Here Comes the Sun by the Beatles. You know, and I'm a huge Beatles fan anyway. Yeah. So
that sounds magical.
Know, and plus it's very magical and almost hallucinogenic because I have been awake for 4 days. Okay. This is day four, okay, and the eclipse is there. As the sun just gets a little bit higher, it warms up just enough, the clouds drop down to about where my feet are, okay?
Okay.
And then they continue to keep dropping. And so the sun gets, you know, you've seen these sequences where the sun continues to get eaten up by the moon, and then totality hits. And Iceland, when you see this, you are completely, utterly unprepared for how you're going to feel for this. Okay.
Really?
And really. And, you know, I've seen beautiful comets. I've seen lots of amazing stuff in the sky. When this happened, I had this feeling of impending doom. Okay. Oh, like there's something very, very wrong. And it was at that point that I realized that I could understand why armies dropped their weapons and ran. Okay.
And, you know, it's like, just get away, hide. The world is ending.
Because it's ending right now. You know, something very, very wrong. The sun is gone. Yeah. You know, so, right. But as it's happening, and this was a particularly long eclipse, like what we're going to experience in Texas for this one. We got an over 4 minute long duration. Wow. Okay. For that particular eclipse, it was called the Great Eclipse because by the time it got to Mexico, they had a 7 minute long duration, you know, so it was just the geometry of the moon and the sun and the earth and all the rest of that stuff. And you can conceptually understand this geometry and you can learn it in school and maybe you've done the math or whatever, but when you see it, it's like, you can't believe it, okay? You cannot believe it. And it affects people differently, but I've never heard anyone that's actually seen a total eclipse like, yeah, I saw a total eclipse, it was all right. I've never heard that.
Are some people like happier and more excited and others are more freaked out? Is that what you see in terms of the variety?
When you're with a group, what you hear are squeals of delight. Okay.
Yeah.
And people going, and gasping, like almost gasping for air. And they're like, if it's the first time, you certainly hear those things. But even the experienced, and there are people that become addicted to eclipses. And this will be my fourth total eclipse that I've gone after.
Okay. I was going to ask.
As soon as it's over, you want to see another one. I mean, it's just like, you can't get enough.
So it sounds like what makes this one coming in April unique is the duration. Is there anything else that makes it special?
There's several really special things about this eclipse. One is that it's going over a very populated area with easy road access to get to the center line. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
It's going over the most populated areas of the United States.
Yeah.
And therefore, it's going to be the greatest science event in human history. Okay.
Wow.
There will be millions of people watching this. Okay. So, you know, if you don't go and see this and you live in the USA, shame on you.
Yeah.
You
know,
because it's almost like if you've never seen one, you know, then you don't know what you're missing. And when you do see one, you go, wow, everybody should see this because it will change your perspective on life.
Wow.
Paradigm shift.
Paradigm shift. In what way? Like, what do you think that is?
Because suddenly it's not conceptualizing anymore. You're realizing that you're on a planet, okay? It's moving through space, all right? And something so amazing is happening in the sky that is beyond anything you've ever experienced ever, okay? There's no light show or concert or Yeah, I'm a father. I rank the experiences to watching childbirth.
Wow.
It is that level of like, oh my God.
Yeah, I guess that awareness, you know, we go about our lives and we're driving and working and eating and we're not really thinking about, unless you're you, perhaps, what is surrounding us, what we're part of.
Well, right. And that's, I'm not very, very special in that regard, but when I wake up in the morning and I see the sun come, I don't think of it as the sun. I see it as a star. Okay.
Cool. Yeah.
And we're very close to the star and I see, you know, this star is keeping everything alive here. It's incredibly special. And it's not just, when you say stuff like that, you know, if we were at a bar and I was telling you, yeah, you know, the sun's special.
Yeah.
It's really amazing.
I'd be like,
going, oh my God, how can I get away from this guy?
Okay. I'd be like, I'm going to move down to this end of the bar. No, just kidding.
Exactly.
But it's, I love that perspective, you know, because I do not think that way. But now I will.
No, you go outside and you think the sun is like a light so you can see stuff, right?
Yeah, basically.
And now it's dark and okay, it's bedtime or whatever. But, you know, so if I walk outside the Airstream right now, I can feel the warmth of the sun.
Mm-hmm.
That's from radiation and, you know, the lightest photons that I'm seeing being emanated from our star.
Yeah.
All the stars that you see, it's the same thing, same process. And some people get really philosophical about this. I've heard amateur astronomers go kind of really down the rabbit
deep,
hole on this, okay? Real deep. They'll say things like, well, you know, you are now looking up and you're seeing the Andromeda Galaxy. And one guy put it so eloquently, I don't know if I can do it, but he said that it's as if you were meant to see that starlight to hit your eyes and it's traveled across all this time. It's just for you. Those same photons aren't hitting other people. They're going for you. Okay.
Yeah.
You're seeing it and you're looking back into time all this time. So there's kind of a time travel aspect to it. I'm really big on trying to connect people with the universe.
Since we have this eclipse coming up and there's so many people who will watch, who will participate in a way that we haven't had before, like, do you expect to kind of see that shift in a lot of people?
Oh, I do. Definitely. This definitely happens. Yeah. Because they experience something like that and they go, well, gosh, I want to do more of this. And they want to kind of connect the dots for themselves after they've seen something like this. It's like, okay.
They have a thirst.
Now what do you think?
Yeah, exactly.
A thirst. It's like a religious experience. It's like they've been baptized or something, you know? And now they want to talk about it. And you can see it in their face and in their eyes that they have really witnessed something that is just awe-inspiring. They've got real awe going on.
Yeah.
And it's good for you.
It sounds like it's good. And I think we could use that just as a collective right now, you know, something to unify us in that way.
It's interesting that you bring that up because we got so many issues.
Yeah.
And while it's true that all those things are happening, what's also true is that things that are on, I'm not going to say bordering on a miracle because they miraculous things are happening all the time, but you're now so desensitized to it. But you can train yourself to appreciate what is happening on a very immediate kind of level. And this is really sad because you are spending more time thinking about how you're different and how things out there are happening to you. And so you feel very disconnected. And this is why people live like in almost a perpetual state of suffering. You know, this happened and that person argued with me or whatever, you know, whatever. You should be jumping up and down and going, I am alive.
And the sun came up.
Breathing this. The sun came up. Do you realize what that means?
Oh my gosh. I got to put a post-it on my computer that says that. The sun came up. Don't complain about anything.
Anything. That's right.
This episode is brought to you by Destination Toronto. If you're a regular listener of this podcast, you may have heard in our Where to Go 2024 episode that Toronto was one of our top picks this year. And it is no surprise. Toronto is one of the most dynamic and diverse cities in the world. Spend a long weekend here and discover what makes it tick. Get a taste of a local classic with a pea meal and bacon and egg breakfast sandwich at the St. Lawrence Market. There are no peas involved, we promise. Stroll around Little Tibet, a neighborhood with one of the largest Tibetan populations outside of Asia. Dine at one of 15 Michelin-starred restaurants. Or open your mind at the Royal Ontario Museum, Canada's largest museum. There's so much to discover and savor. Find your Toronto at destinationtoronto.com. So it's been talked about quite a bit that Texas is the very best place in the United States to see this eclipse. How was that determined?
We looked at a website called Eclipsophile, and this is where all the eclipse chasers, they look at the what's called fractional cloud cover data. Eclipsophile has done an amazing job of collecting cloud cover data over the last 20 years, and it turned out that for a 20-year average, that Texas, southern Texas, if you're going to stay in the United States, has the best odds for clear weather. So that's the reason why everybody's going down to Texas, right? So where we're going to be is we're going down to San Antonio.
Okay. Yeah.
And then we're going to shoot across from San Antonio going west a couple of hours out where a little town called Lakey, Texas is. And we're going to be on a private ranch.
Wow.
So my intention is to bring Barbara Jean, the vintage Airstream, down there. We'll have a Starlink internet connection.
Uh-huh.
We have a person that does catering. They're coming out from Florida for this with their catering truck.
Wow.
Because they do star parties. They do astronomy events.
What? So
they
could get a caterer for a star party?
Amateur astronomer.
Damn.
Yes.
That's cool.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be fun. It's over the same spot where the annular eclipse of 2023 happened.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's literally over the same spot of ground.
Very cool.
These two eclipses are crossing, okay? And so the people that attended that eclipse certainly are coming back for the total, okay?
Well, where would you send somebody who's in this place where, okay, I don't know. I hadn't made plans yet.
I would tell you to come with me down to Texas.
Okay. All right. Can I join your ranch?
Yes, you can join. There's still space. We're making it very affordable. If you go to explorescientific.com/eclipse.
Okay.
You're going to see something called the Crossroads of the Eclipses Star Party.
Oh, neat. Okay, I'll take a look.
You click on that and you buy a ticket and you can go. You're going to be in one of the best spots in the entire country to see it, okay?
Okay, on a practical level, what do you need to view an eclipse? How do you get ready? Do you need gear? What's the best way to view one?
You need these. Okay, these are eclipse glasses. Uh-huh. All right? So most people that are eclipse chasers are going to say, look, for your first time, and they always say the first time because they know it's not going to be your last time, okay? Right? Because once you see one, you're going to go, I got to see another one. I got you, exactly. It's very addictive. Can be very expensive. I have had friends that have spent tens of thousands of dollars to go see an eclipse, okay?
Wow.
So it can be that expensive. Just to be able to drive to one is really rare. So you got to go. You're going to buy, I sell eclipse glasses as well. So you'll see all the things that you need. All right. But most eclipse chasers are going to tell you your first eclipse, you just need to see it. Okay. Don't
over-prepare.
Bring a bunch of camera gear.
Yeah.
Don't over-prepare because you're being that you've never done one and you have not seen it. You're going to be inexperienced, and you're going to concentrate too much on your gear trying to get the great photo. Later, I do recommend you do try to do that, but your first time, you need to go out and have very inexpensive eclipse glasses. You need to make sure that those eclipse glasses have this ISO rating on them.
Okay.
And that they're safe for you.
Yep.
We are shortlisted on the American Astronomical Society's website, and that's the organization that all the professional astronomers belong to.
Yeah, got it. Okay.
And so we're listed as a recommended place to get your eclipse glasses. This involves us testing and making sure that these things are really safe. And so the way that you're going to use them, these things just kind of fold up and, you know, you can download free apps for your phone to tell you when the first contact is going to happen and when to put on your eclipse glasses, et cetera. But if you're with a group like us, I'm going to say, okay, everybody put their eclipse glasses on. And you're going to do that by looking down at the ground first. And then you're just going to move your head. You can feel the warmth of the sun on your face. So you can kind of, despite the feeling of that, you're going to see this ball and you're going to go, oh, wow, that's the sun. It's pretty big. I mean, it's not going to fill up your field of view of the glasses, but you're going to say, okay, I see that. It looks as big as the moon does.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Right in the sky with the naked eye. And there's a slow march of the sun getting more and more eaten up. You know, first contact, people say first contact.
Okay.
And you know that it's going to happen, but still it's a slow march. And so, you know, you might look up at it for a while and go, okay, it's, you know, about that much of it's eaten up. And, you know, you drink some water or whatever and talk to your friends and then you check again. Okay. More. Okay. Now it's starting to get close to where you got the last remaining parts. At this point, everybody's like entranced. They're watching this and they see it and they go, wow. Okay. There's like now a thin line. And you start to see like little tiny dots around the edge of the moon. And those are called Bailey's beads.
Oh.
It's the sunlight going between the mountains
on
the moon. It's really fascinating. It's beautiful to watch. And they do like a little twinkling dance effect.
Cool.
And then all of a sudden, everything kind of goes dark because mm-hmm. you're wearing eclipse glasses.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people forget to take them off.
Oh, no.
Because they think they got to keep them on the whole darn time, right? No, this time you pull them off.
Okay.
And you just look at it. Okay.
Wow.
And now you're going to see this beautiful display of the corona, which is invisible to you all the time, but it is out there all the time, too. You might see prominences that look like giant flames leaping off the sun. Okay.
Wow.
But like frozen, like in slow motion, you know, these arcs, and it doesn't get black now. It's like a really dark blue color in the sky. But you probably can pick out if there's some planets nearby. Okay. And there mm-hmm. will be Jupiter nearby. You'll probably see it with the naked eye. And, there's also going to be a comet next to Jupiter during this same time, but the comet will appear much fainter than the glow of the sun. So you probably won't see it naked eye.
Okay.
But it will be miraculous and you will feel the temperature drop.
Oh,
okay?
Yeah.
And we're going to be in Texas. So there's a lot of birds and natural wildlife around us. These animals will feel like it's time to go to bed or to wake up if they're nocturnal. And they do so in a very short amount of time, in seconds, really.
So you just get this silence that comes.
Yeah. Yes. Or you hear things that you would only hear at night. Okay. And so that is an effect. And there's something called shadow bands, which also occur. And this is the interference of the sunlight interacting with our atmosphere and stuff. It's beautiful to watch.
Yeah.
And you're going to have 4 minutes of it, 4 minutes and 20 seconds or so from our Texas location. The further north you get, the shorter this gets, but still you're going to have some minutes, okay, to watch it no matter where you are in the United States, if you got clear skies. And then usually right after the eclipse, and sometimes at the beginning of an eclipse, you see something called the diamond ring effect. It's the last bright shaft of sunlight that's coming off the edge of the moon. And it's just beautiful. Okay. And that's usually like the amazing finish of an eclipse, you know, and you just go, wow, what was that? You know, and now it's starting to get so bright that you got to
put your glasses on. Okay.
You got to put them back on. And then you'll watch the final phases of it. But you will hear people squealing. You will see people crying.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. It's that big of a deal. So I'm excited to see it again, obviously, and really want you to see it because this is something you're going to remember for the rest of your life.
Amazing. Well, and you mentioned that you'll have Barbara Jean down there, your Airstream. And I just wanted to ask you a couple more questions going back to what you started with about your Airstream travels. Were eclipses the reason that you decided to kind of buy this Airstream, hit the road? What was the inspiration for that?
No, I'm a telescope maker, okay, and designer. And so I go to a number of astronomy events.
Got it.
And I wanted to simplify my life, okay? So there was that desire, you know. I'd hit a point in my life where I just go, well, I don't really want all the stuff I've got. And so I had a house full of stuff and shrunk everything down to where I could live in an Airstream.
Amazing.
And that was a lot of fun. It was really a feeling of freedom, you know, to be able to unload like that. And then to be able to travel and basically have your home with you all the time.
And then how long did it take you to kind of outfit it? Because it sounds like you basically redid everything.
That did take a couple of years.
Yeah. Did you do it as you were on the road, or was that like kind of over time?
No. Okay. No, I did pay for a guy to do it. It was my design,
Nice.
And it ended up, I hired a guy through the guy who did the major work on the Airstream. We hired a guy that did installs for luxury jets. Okay. So if you see, this is like aluminum wrapped around there.
It's very clean.
It's curved. Every Airstream is unique, you know, and they all have their curves and stuff like that. And so he built all these things, really custom cabinetry. I knew I wanted an expanded bathroom. I wanted ample counter space where I could lay out my computers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
This Airstream is daytime right now, but if it was night, I would show you that the lighting in here can go from white light to red light.
Oh, nice.
And astronomers need red light to protect their night vision. So I have a microwave drawer. So it's kind of, everything's out of the way and stuff, and it slides out. And, you know, I can heat up coffee or hot chocolate or whatever. And all the cabinets and everything have locks like you would see on a boat.
Nice.
So I had friends that did boats for a long time, and you know, and this, the Airstream, just as it's going down the road, it's, I can't remember what they said, it's like a level 5 earthquake the entire time as it's going down the road. So things break, you got to be able to fix them and stuff. So, and I've had to fix things on this Airstream too, but for the most part, it's been a very rugged, reliable, this is a 50-year-old Airstream. Okay.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's really good enough for another 50 years.
Why were you drawn toward an Airstream, and why do you think people love them so much?
I always admired the Airstream. My mother, Barbara Jean, was kind of a gypsy. You know, she moved all the time. She would have loved this thing.
Yeah.
Okay. She would have loved it. You know, you wake up on the Florida Keys, you know, watching the sunrise, you know, and you're getting a view that no one else has. Everybody talks about, you know, you're taking your home with you, you're going with a community. And when you're pulling one of these things, it's not like, you know, you're pulling a trailer. People see it and they go, wow, that's an Airstream. They something in their head kind of kicks off. It's like seeing a telescope. You imagine the exploration that you're going to have in space. Okay. When you see an Airstream going down the road, you imagine the adventure that you're going to have.
It's so iconic in a way that you don't usually react that way to just a regular RV, right? It's like, okay, it's an RV, but an Airstream is like,
yeah, you and your family are not going to do selfies in front of any trailer, okay? But an Airstream, you're going to, right?
Yeah.
And so that's what it's like.
I love it.
Yeah. And I have people stop me routinely and ask me about it why I got an Airstream and how can I get one and stuff. So
how many eclipses have you witnessed with Barbara Jean?
With Barbara Jean, one.
Well, so this will
and
be
that
two.
That would have been the 2017 eclipse up in Casper, Wyoming.
Is there anything else you want to add about your Airstream adventures or your work or eclipses and why we should see them?
You know, you definitely should see this total eclipse if you live in the Americas or if you live in Mexico, if you're in Mexico watching this or listening to this. Mexico is actually going to have better weather prospects than the United States will. Okay, so that's something to certainly check out. Go and look at the eclipse websites that are out there. Go to star parties. You know, get out there. Stop thinking about, gosh, I really would like to have an Airstream one day, you know?
Yeah.
And darn it, just go get one. Do it.
And okay? Go to a star party.
And go to a star party or go to the national park or do anything that you love to do. Because once you do it, you're going to go, wow, I do not know why I didn't do this before. Okay. I don't know why I didn't take this trip before. I didn't go on the road before. You know, I mean, the clock's ticking. You've got this miraculous time called life, and you're not going to be able to make these long trips when you're 90. Okay. You know, I think everybody should have a telescope. I think it's an essential piece of exploring your universe. You know, you have a universe that, you know, that you can explore on a personal level. I think having a telescope, a microscope, and a pair of binoculars are essential for people that live on Earth. Okay, which is all of us. And enjoy it. Don't take things so seriously. Because I think if you do some of this stuff and you make yourself happy, you're going to add some years to your life. And they're going to be good ones.
You seem very happy.
I am. Take it in. Wake up, you know, and start to understand, you know, this pale blue dot that you live on. You know, you're very, very lucky, very lucky to be alive. The conditions to create life are probably all over the universe, but so far we haven't found any other place where life exists except here.
Thank you, Scott. In case you are as persuaded as I am that we need to see the solar eclipse, we'll link to the trip he's organizing on his Explore Scientific website in the show notes. And if you've already planned a trip, let us know which part of North America you'll be in at unpackedatafar.com. Plus, you can see a photo of his Airstream on Afar's social media accounts or by subscribing to our Behind the Mic newsletter. The link is in the show notes. Ready for more unpacking? Visit afar.com and be sure to follow us on Instagram and X. We are at Afar Media. If you enjoyed today's exploration, I hope you'll come back for more great stories. Subscribing always makes that easy. And be sure to rate and review the show on your favorite podcast platforms. It helps other travelers find it. And if you ever want to ask a question or suggest a topic for coverage, you can reach out to us at afar.com/feedback or email us at unpacked@afar.com. This has been Unpacked, a production of Afar Media. The podcast is produced by Aislinn Green and Nikki Galteland. Music composition by Chris Collin. And remember, the world is complicated. We're here to help you unpack it.